Hello, developers, and welcome to the PHP Architect Community Corner, where we have conversations with members of the web development community. I'm your host, Scott Keck Warren, and today we're talking with Eric Mann about Kubernetes and Displaced.Tech. Eric Mann is a well-established cybersecurity, software, and infrastructure engineer, having led multiple teams of various sizes across both public and private sectors. Eric has experience architecting high availability and resilient software as a service platforms, scalable e-commerce websites, and industry-defining AI/ML operations. In addition to leading technical teams, Eric frequently lectures at events on both scalable engineering and cybersecurity. He also publishes books on programming and secure software design. Eric is a member of both the ISACA and the OWASP, and is on the release management team for both PHP 8.3 and 8.4. Thank you for finding some time to talk to us today. So can you start out and talk to us about what Kubernetes is and kind of the problems that it solves?
Absolutely. So Kubernetes, and I'll try not to use too many complicated terms without describing them. Kubernetes is a container orchestration tool that allows you to run containerized workloads in an automated fashion across heterogeneous infrastructure. That's a lot of very large syllable words to explain that Kubernetes makes it easier to use things like Docker containers, which take applications and kind of wrap them and make them a build once, run anywhere kind of scenario. But then you can actually, you don't have to schedule it yourself. You don't have to manage the infrastructure yourself. You can use Kubernetes to say, here are the servers that I have available. Here's how much CPU I have. Here's how much memory I have. Here's how much disk I have. And then Kubernetes is basically a daemon that will run behind the scenes and say, okay, here are the resources I have available, and here are the workloads that I need to run. I will then choose to schedule these different workloads on these specific machines in such a way to make the best use of the infrastructure available. So it takes the guesswork away from trying to figure out, okay, what server size do I need? What instances do I need? Where do I put my compute? How much memory do I need? Kubernetes will figure that out for you. The other advantage, because it's fully automated, if something happens to the hardware, let's say a server goes offline, you have multiple servers and one of the servers goes offline, which happens, hardware failures, somebody accidentally bumps the surge protector, all sorts of things can happen. Kubernetes will detect that, the scheduler will detect that, and then it will reschedule your workload on a different server transparently, and also route all of the incoming internet traffic to the running container appropriately. So you don't have to worry about doing all of the networking yourself, managing where things are running. Kubernetes does that for you. It takes all of the guesswork out and automates it behind the scenes.
Yeah. So I don't usually work with Kubernetes. I don't work with Kubernetes at all at this point. And so is the idea kind of like you have, like there's another container kind of within your infrastructure that's managing all this, or does it have to run like on your local computer? How does that work? What's doing the actual, like, making sure things are running piece?
Yeah, Kubernetes actually runs in multiple different forms. So Kubernetes is actually a suite of different software applications. It's not just a single homogenous thing. So Kubernetes will run a kind of like a manager node and then worker nodes. And inside the manager node is something called the control plane. And the control plane is what determines what namespaces are available, any sort of persistent volume claims, persistent volumes, cron jobs that need to be scheduled, and all of the different things under the hood are managed by the control plane. And then you can register additional nodes to the system so that you can have these different resources available. You can also build it in such a way where the nodes are not the same. You might have a node that has a really beefy GPU assigned to it and a bunch of nodes that don't have a GPU because they're headless servers. You don't really need graphics processing. But that server that has the beefy GPU, you might want to run something like OLLaMA on that to do a bunch of LLM work behind the scenes where GPU is going to be really well suited for that kind of a workload. So you can define these with Kubernetes and tell the control plane, here are the different worker nodes I have. These five worker nodes are just standard instances that have like standard compute, standard memory, standard disk. And this one has the same memory, disk, and everything, but also like a really beefy NVIDIA GPU. And so any workloads that need GPU acceleration assigned to this node. And that's something called node affinity. And that's just something that's built into the control plane, built into the controller, where it will actually go through and do that. You can also run in a multi-controller environment. So you can have high availability and redundancy where you have multiple controllers that are powering the control plane. And they'll communicate with each other in kind of like a mesh network. So if one of them goes offline, your entire cluster doesn't go offline as well. The other ones can step in and still handle the load. Yeah, but no, it's not a separate container you run. It is a binary process. Typically, Kubernetes will take over the entire machine that you're running on. Kind of like when you run Docker desktop on a local machine or K3S on a local machine. It's a binary that runs on the machine that provides the containerization interface that the containers run in. And Kubernetes runs outside of the containers to power the containers. And it's all Open Container Initiative, OCI, compatible. And there are ways you can technically run Kubernetes inside Docker, which is very much a Russian nesting doll kind of approach where you're running the container orchestration tool inside a container that's orchestrated potentially by another orchestration tool. But no, typically Kubernetes just runs on the host natively as a binary or a set of binaries, and then the containers run inside that.
Okay. And so this is something like we can have, it's not just like a cloud-based concept, right? Like we could run this locally, like within our own, like, you know, within our local computer or like our, you know, if we had an on-premises like data center, we could run it all in those places as well.
Absolutely. So a lot of people, like if you're using Docker desktop today, you can actually go into the settings and turn on Kubernetes. And then you can be running Kubernetes from Docker desktop with all of the same tools, all of the same orchestration as well. I personally use a flavor of Kubernetes called K3S. It's maintained by the Rancher community. And K3S is a slimmed down single binary version of Kubernetes that's still compliant with the full spec, but it's fewer moving parts to install. So it's much smaller, much lighter weight, much more fault tolerant in my experience. And I run that on a fleet of NUCs, sitting next unit of compute, like the little mini PCs, sitting in a stack behind my monitor. So I have four of them running. One of them is running as the controller. The other three are all running as worker nodes. All of them are running the K3S binary. They talk to each other over a mesh network, and they distribute the workloads from there. So all of my everything from my blog to all sorts of other tools to even my own personal GitTS server or GitT server, all of those run on those NUCs using Kubernetes and local orchestration.
I never thought about that because I know I've seen people online where they have like they'll have like a stack of Raspberry Pis and they'll be doing like that same thing. But I never thought about putting it on like one of those little NUCs. That's an interesting concept before, because it really doesn't. They don't need to be crazy machines, right? They can just be like whatever you have laying around. Like I could probably do it with my old laptops if I really felt like it.
I have got a couple of laptops sitting around that I'm ready to repurpose. I just haven't gotten around to it.
Yeah. The one that I've been playing around with, doing like parallel development with AI like tools, like trying to have, you know, and like the thing I always run up into the limitation of is like it's always like there's not enough CPU on the computer that I'm using, and I'm like, well, how many like laptops could I set up? And this sounds like something I could do is I could carry like a crazy cluster, and then like just distribute it across like all my old laptops essentially. So that's an interesting idea. I gotta play with that, I guess, some more. So one of the reasons that we're kind of talking today is that you are with one of the partners that for PHP Architect, Displaced Technologies. And can you tell us a little bit about what Displaced Technologies is and kind of the problems that it solves?
Absolutely. So one of the reasons why I like talking about Kubernetes is because it's hard and I want to make it easier. And to be perfectly honest, for a significant portion of my career, I did not understand Kubernetes, and I avoided it like the plague. In the early days, there was no graphical interface. Everything was done via tags on the command line. And there was a time where you had to just keep track in your head of what all of the commands were, the flags, the different tags for resources to actually manage a Kubernetes cluster, which was horribly, horribly inaccessible to anybody who wasn't a native to that ecosystem. So coming in and trying to learn it, the learning curve was near vertical. It was just impossible to get over. So I spent a bunch of time using different tools and slowly edging my way there. But over time, realized that learning curve was a huge disadvantage to folks because there were still people who were building entire bespoke servers using, like on Amazon, so everything in cloud hosting, but they were packaging their own AMIs and distributing their own machine images rather than distributing containers. So this meant you'd have, even in like the 2020s plus, you had organizations who were shipping entire servers on a weekly cadence, and that was the only release they'd do, is one release per week, because they could not use continuous integration, continuous delivery, because it was so just onerous, just a huge, horribly complicated process to get that server out there. So I started working with these organizations to help them with their evolution and their adaptation towards using containerization. So first with Docker Swarm, and then with Kubernetes. And this gave them the ability to not just ship much more rapidly, going from maybe 1-2 releases a week to maybe 20 or 30 releases in a day. So much faster turnaround for bug fixes, new feature requests, and everything that they needed to ship, but also much more fault tolerant. Fault tolerance, business continuity, disaster recovery are huge for me. If you are building a server that takes hours to build, hours to deploy, and a server goes down, even in an Amazon or a Google or a Microsoft cloud host, it will take you hours to get back up. And if you are a business that is, let's say, operating during the holiday time, running e-commerce, and you're down for hours, every minute you're offline is measurable lost revenue. So taking a containerization approach, now the servers are ephemeral. The control plane is persistent. The control plane is distributed and high availability. Your workloads are completely ephemeral. If they go down, they're rescheduled in seconds, not hours, onto new hardware. And a very specific example I have with a past employer, we had a fault where all of our servers, they just happened to be apparently on the same rack in the same data center. There was a massive hardware failure that took down our entire server system simultaneously. So there was no way that we could fail over it. There was no sort of recovery. This is the kind of thing that would have been an 8 to 12 hour outage in the past with bespoke servers and really slow deployment times. We were back up in 5 minutes because it was just as easy to spin up brand new servers and then just reschedule workloads because everything was already there. Everything was already deployed thanks to containerization. Moving beyond that, I've also helped organizations work with heterogeneous infrastructure. So they're not working with just one server type. They might have a server rack that's in the closet in the office. They might have Amazon Cloud where they're running some workloads. They might have a completely different server rack in an offsite facility, or they might have a small flyaway kit, a box that they need to send to an air gap facility somewhere where they don't have Wi-Fi. Maybe they don't have network connectivity, but they need to do remote diagnostics and they need to have a similar system in play. And in situations like that, using containerization is huge, because containerization abstracts the hardware away. It's the same image, it's the same application that can run anywhere, so long as you effectively pave over the differences in the hardware, which is where Kubernetes comes in, because it gives you that kind of an environment. The only thing you have to care about then is architecture. Is it ARM or is it like x86, AMD 64? Is it traditional hardware or is it the newer, new school hardware like ARM processors that you see in mobile devices or Apple devices, and now more and more often on server devices as well? So once you can build for those multiple different architectures, it doesn't matter where you run. As long as it's Kubernetes, your application will run and you can use the same tools. So displace technologies is my attempt to take everything that I've learned over my career with containerization and with disaster recovery, fault tolerance, and making machines and services incredibly, incredibly battle-tested, and bringing that to folks who either don't know how to spell any of the words that I've just used, they have no experience with Kubernetes, and they're looking at a near vertical learning curve that I was earlier in my career, or they want this, they want to be able to do it, but they either don't have the time or they don't have the budget for an on-site DevOps team. They can't pay for a full systems team to actually run all of this, and they don't want to go out and hire because they aren't sure who to hire. So displaced technologies is my attempt to help bring this learning to the masses, to help people fill that gap in their understanding. And I do this in a couple of ways. Number one, by providing a command line utility called displace, just because I like the word. So displace is a wrapper over top of all of the industry standard tools. So kubectl is the Kubernetes control CLI that you use to actually manage your cluster. Helm is a tool that you use to deploy applications to a Kubernetes cluster. K9s, which is similar to K8s, which is how people will concatenate and like shorten Kubernetes. K9s is a command line utility that gives you a command line based GUI to view your cluster, manage your cluster, see how things are actually running. K3S, I think I mentioned before, is a Rancher community project that is a streamlined version of Kubernetes. K3D is a further automation on top of that that takes K3S and rather than running it in a binary native on your machine, runs it inside a container, inside a Docker container. So it's very much like turtles all the way down, because now you can run full Kubernetes inside Docker without running full Kubernetes on your machine and having to take over your laptop. So you can have Kubernetes on your laptop, Kubernetes in the cloud, Kubernetes in the data center, and they're going to look the same. You can run the same workloads everywhere. And my goal with Displace the command line utility is to wrap these tools to lessen the steepness of the learning curve to make it easier for folks to onboard to those tools. But then in addition to that, I'm providing additional abstractions and automations around the different cloud providers. So Amazon has a fully managed Kubernetes control plane. We mentioned the control plane before. If you use Amazon EKS, you don't have to manage Kubernetes itself. You're just managing your workloads. You're paying Amazon to manage the control plane. So all of the high availability, the fault tolerance, backup updates, everything, they manage that for you. And they just give you a target to which you can deploy. And again, it's the same Kubernetes you can run anywhere else. Google has their version as Google Kubernetes Engine. Same thing. Amazon, Microsoft has their version as well. I think it's like Azure Kubernetes System, AKS. But then you also have DigitalOcean has their version. Linode has their version. Hetzner has their version. All of the different cloud hosts have their version of a fully managed Kubernetes infrastructure that allow you to just target it and say, we're using Amazon for this cluster. We're going to deploy all of our application to Amazon or to Linode or to DigitalOcean. And all of those providers are the managed hosts who will manage the Kubernetes control plane for you. You just manage the application. And I'm trying to make that as easy as possible. And that's the goal behind Displace Technology, is help people, to help small businesses, small to medium businesses, or even just solo developers have the enterprise level infrastructure without having to pay for an enterprise scale SRE team.
And I think that's really like, that is a lot of acronyms. Like I think even just like having like the K number S seems like it would be impossible to keep straight in your head for everybody. And
it can be. Yeah. I mean, Kates is easy because it's just Kubernetes is Kates, but then K9s is meant to be built on top of Kates, and K3S, literally the three means nothing other than it's smaller than Kates.
Yeah.
That's super confusing. It can be.
Yeah. And so the kind of the idea though is like you've extracted away like the, like if today I decide I want to run my workload in Amazon Web Services, I could do that. But then like maybe in a month, Google's, you know, has some huge amazing reason to switch over. And so I could just kind of take like the same piece and like move my data over and then like turn it on over there essentially. Is that kind of the, like one of the benefits essentially?
Well, yes, and you don't even have to move your data over. So the way that I'm building the tool specifically is to give you a single command. So displace deploy, which allows you to deploy to a local cluster on your machine for development testing, or you can deploy to Amazon, or you can deploy to Google, or you can deploy to Azure. So I'm taking all of the differences between the different deployment targets and abstracting them away so that you don't have to worry about them until you want to. And then when you want to, I don't make it opaque. It's super transparent. It's like if you get to the point where you don't want to pay me anymore for using my tools and using my abstractions, I will help you upgrade to using the native ones. There is, again, a bit of a learning curve there. It is somewhat steep because every provider is different, but I will help you bridge that gap and I will help you take that leap so that you can actually start working with the native tools and you don't have to continue using the wrapper.
Okay. And so the idea is that like, so you've built this wrapper. And then like people will pay you for like connecting to the like maintenance essentially of the connections between the CLI and the different providers. And then there's other like stuff built on top of that. Is that a fair assessment of what's going on?
It is, because there's the providers, but then there's also the way you configure your application. So if you're building like a smaller Docker Compose application, it's like a single compose file where you define, let's look at PHP, for example. Here's my Laravel application. Here's my MySQL database. Here's my Redis cache. It's pretty straightforward. You just have those three components. But then when you start talking about taking this to production scale, Docker Compose starts to fall down. Because in production, you might want to have, here's my PHP application, which is stateless. And I want to have three replicas of that, maybe in three different regions. One in the US West Coast, one on the US East Coast, one in Germany, so that I can service EU customers as well. You can't do that with Docker Compose. That's very specific to the cloud host that you're hosting with. But then in addition to that, your MySQL database, which is where all the state lives, how is that distributed across these things? How is your Redis cache distributed? Is there a single Redis cache for each PHP application, or is it a Redis cluster that's distributed across regions? How do the databases sync against each other? So once you start dealing with that kind of level, again, enterprise scale, you have to start dealing with replication counts with node affinity. Do you want to deploy? Where do you want to deploy things? So node affinity, like I mentioned before, in Kubernetes, you have the control node and the worker nodes. If you are deploying a PHP, let's just stick with a simple Laravel application with a MySQL database. You want to have the PHP application and the MySQL database on the same server to minimize latency, not just the same data center, on the same server in the same node. So this is where you define either node affinity or you define it to be a single Kubernetes pod. And a Kubernetes pod is a bundle of resources that are always deployed onto the same hardware. Because your cluster might be, let's say, three servers, they might all be in the same Amazon data center, but you don't want to have PHP on one server and MySQL on the other server because of the latency between the two. You want them on the same server so they're communicating over localhost for as little latency as possible. And those levels of abstractions are what's much more complicated. So you can build the application, you can design the application, but one of the things that I do with the Display CLI is I provide you the application template. So if you want a simple Laravel application, I give you the template for all of the Helm charts, all of the configuration for what that could look like, and then you build your application into that template so that you don't have to think through all of those different abstractions. Or if you say, I want this to be enterprise scale high availability, I give you that template. Today, thus far, I've shipped a static application template, a basic PHP application template, and even a WordPress template that allow people to stand up an enterprise scale WordPress distribution without having to think through all of the different intricacies of where does the database live, where does the application live, where does the cache live, how do we deal with the files? Because that's another nuance of Kubernetes. Remember, you're treating the server instance as ephemeral. It can go away. It can disappear at any point in time. If you upload a lot of media, let's say you stand up a WordPress site and you want to use this as a photo blog and you're updating a bunch of photos, if the server is ephemeral, that means all of your photos can disappear in a moment's notice. And Kubernetes, by default, will reschedule your application frequently, especially if you're in the cloud on Amazon, Microsoft, Google, or other hosts. They might move your application around on different server nodes on a regular basis just to cycle new hardware in, old hardware out. And if the data storage is ephemeral, all of your pictures disappear with no notification. So within Kubernetes, you set up persistent volumes, which are ways to map file system storage into your containers such that if the node goes away and everything disappears, your storage is still there. Your uploaded media doesn't disappear. And these are the kinds of things that you wouldn't define in a Docker Compose file. You would define instead in a Helm manifest. And that's a level of abstraction that folks who aren't an SRE, a site reliability engineer, or haven't been doing this level of infrastructure DevOps work wouldn't necessarily get right the first time. And when you don't get it right the first time, it's a very painful lesson when you try to learn, where did my gigabytes and gigabytes of photos just go?
Yeah. And this is me, more of a me question, but so like, how does that actually work? Like within, like, so let's take Amazon Web Services, for example. So like, is that then getting saved back to like an S3 bucket and it's just like a bucket, or is it some sort of other storage medium? Like where do those actually go? Do you know?
You can define it in different ways. So on Amazon, it's typically an EBS volume, an Elastic Block Store volume, which hardware under the hood is still using similar technology to S3, but it's not just saying, give me a server. It's give me a server with an EBS volume, and the EBS volume is backed up on a regular basis. Mm. There are additional tools you can use in a production environment. One is called Longhorn, not to be confused with Longhorn PHP. It's a very different Longhorn, but Longhorn gives you file replication across nodes as well. So you can install Longhorn. It runs again as a pod within the Kubernetes cluster, and it will create persistent volumes on each node and then mirror the data across each node. If you're running your own Kubernetes and you're building your own Kubernetes, it's very valuable to do it that way. If you're using a managed host like Amazon, Microsoft, or Google, they use their version, whichever their proprietary version of an EBS, an Elastic Block Store is, they use that for the persistent volume, so you don't have to worry as much about backup and data recovery. But if you're doing it yourself, like across a fleet of NUCs, for example, on your desk, using something like Longhorn mirrors the data across them and allows you to not have to worry about one of them being having coffee spilled on it and destroying the machine.
Right. That's really interesting. So basically there's multiple plan types. You can start out with the community type to get started for free. And then you really, like, once you're ready to, like, move to production, that's when the paid tier was working, right? Is that a good?
Yeah. The community edition will give you the full CLI, and the CLI gives you, in addition to installing and keeping up to date all of the different industry tools, it also sets up a fully managed Kubernetes cluster on your local machine using K3D. So once again, to disambiguate the acronyms, Kubernetes, also known as CATES, is the full container orchestration, container scheduler system. K3S is the slimmed down version of it, and K3D is just K3S run in Docker. So that way it's not corrupting your whole machine. So the display CLI by default will launch a K3D cluster on your local machine that gives you the ability to manage it just like you would in the cloud. So you can still use Helm to deploy to it. You can use kubectl to manage the resources. You can use K9s to visualize what's going on in the cluster. And it gives you the ability to build your application, deploy it locally, make sure everything works and you're happy with it, and then you can deploy it to production. A recent change I've introduced also adds Cloudflare D, which is the daemon for Cloudflare tunnels. I think they used to be called Argo tunnels. Now they're just within the Zero Trust application. And this gives you the ability to map whatever domain you want. Let's say local.phparch.com. You can point that at your local K3D cluster. So if you have persistent internet, like gig fiber, 10 gig fiber, whatever you have, and a desktop, you can actually use your K3D cluster as quasi-production and stand things up without having to use things like Ngrok or Tailscale or any of those other services, because Cloudflare can now point directly at your local cluster and you can deploy things and actually experiment and play with it.
That's cool too. I didn't know you could do that with Cloudflare.
That's how all my services are hosted. Yeah.
Oh, okay. We use Ngrok to do, like, if we want to give, like, access to, like, you know, the development environment to somebody outside of, like, our, you know, that doesn't have dev access, essentially, like, within, like, our organization. That's interesting, though. I had to look at that. I didn't know Cloudflare did that as well. It's amazing all the things Cloudflare does now. So, yeah. Is there anything that you'd like to direct our listeners to before I let you go for today?
No, nothing specific. I'm just happy to be part of the community, trying to give back as best I can. So this is a project I've been working on for a little bit over a year after I went to a WordPress conference and met up with all of the expensive managed hosts and realized that they hadn't done anything in the 10 years since I had kind of, like, stepped back from the WordPress community. They were still offering the same hosting packages. And a couple of them argued with me about whether or not Enterprise could do it better. So I blogged about it, and this is kind of like the whole origin of Displace. I blogged about how disappointed I was in the fact that nobody had evolved how they did hosting in about a decade. And in one day, I got more traffic on my site on a $75 NUC hosted at home on my regular fiber connection. I got more traffic on my blog that one day than any of the hosts there would have allowed me to have with their $250 a month hosting package. Great. Just because they limit ingress, they limit bandwidth, they limit number of visitors. And so sitting there looking at, okay, if this is the best that small and medium businesses can have, they can pay $250 a month for a maximum of 50,000 visits to their site. What's going to happen when they're successful? What's going to happen is this scale. They're just going to continue to get fleeced by the hosting providers who are still giving them commodity infrastructure, low PHP versions that they're not keeping updated, no support. They're just not giving them the tools that they can have. And I've been spoiled working in enterprise for so long where I've had teams of 8 to 12 SREs who can do this professionally, mm-hmm. where it's, I want to give that back to the community so that everybody can do that. They don't have to pay an exorbitant amount of money to a host. And so using open source tools, I can do that. Using the community version of my Displace CLI, folks can actually use that and have access to all of the tools. But if they want to further support the project and want to support ongoing development, the ongoing research, and the ongoing support of the community, I'd highly encourage them to look into one of the more expensive, yes, but more expensive packages, because they help fund the ongoing development of the tools. They help fund and maintain and support the project.
Yeah, and I think like from like my perspective, though, that, like, it's a tiny amount in comparison to how much I might accidentally screw up, like, you know, it's a peace of mind payment for me to pay you like for this every year, as opposed to like me like messing up everything, right? Like that's, it's like a nice, like, especially since it's just me doing like my solo stuff. It would be mm-hmm. helpful to have all that as opposed to just totally messing things up. So, but thank you again for your time and for supporting the community and everything.
Absolutely. Well, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. I had to say another heartfelt thank you to Eric for all of his time, as well as for you for listening. If you're not already a subscriber, make sure you subscribe with whatever your preferred method is so you can get episodes as soon as they're released, and maybe share this post with your coworkers so they can learn from it as well. This podcast is available both in an audio version on the PHP Architect website, as well as a video version on our YouTube channel. This is Scott Keck Warren for the PHP Architect Community Corner signing off and reminding you to keep listening, keep coding, and keep reading.